All right, well, I see it's a little after 11. We get started, and I imagine we'll hear some more dings as people join. Well, welcome. Thanks for joining today's presentation of From Me to We with Bob Dotbelt. My name is Meredith Herr, and you should feel free to email me with any questions during the presentation. My email is meredith@thesocialcapitalproject.org. Also, if you can go ahead and mute your phone until we get to the Q&A portion. That will help us avoid any background noise. Thanks. So today we'll be hearing about the methods for helping organizations move from a focus on individual needs to caring for and sustaining our broader social and ecological systems. This is a first session in a series of introductory topics that Bob will be discussing this fall. On October 3rd, he'll be talking about the power of sustainable thinking and how people move through the stages of change. On October 27th, he'll introduce the 7 sustainability blunders that prevent organizations from adopting successful climate and sustainability plans. And on December 18th, Bob will describe how the wheel of change is the cornerstone of effective sustainability initiatives. We have more information about each of those sessions on our website at theresourceinnovationgroup.org. And also, since these are introductory topics, we're really interested in hearing if you'd like more in-depth sessions that delve kind of more deeply into the material, which is something to keep in mind during today's presentation. I also want to note that the series is being hosted by Climate Access. If you're not familiar with the network already, we provide climate practitioners with tools and resources to help groups communicate with the public about climate change and making that transition to low-carbon, resilient communities. And I encourage everyone to visit climateaccess.org and to sign up and become a member. So before I turn it over to Bob, I'd like to just share a little bit about his experience. Bob is the Executive Director of the Resource Innovation Group, which is a sustainability and global climate change education, research, and technical assistance nonprofit affiliated with the Center for Sustainable Communities at Willamette University. And it's also the home organization of Climate Access. Bob is an adjunct professor in the Department of Planning, Public Policy, and Management at the University of Oregon, where he teaches systems thinking and global warming policy. And he's also taught at the Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco and at the Bainbridge Graduate Institute in Seattle. Just a quick reminder, too, for everyone to mute your phone lines, too, so we can avoid the background noise. It would be great. I hear a little background. So, thanks.
That is star 6. Then?
My phone won't mute.
Yeah, I think you can do star 6 on this line. Thanks.
Try star 6.
Nope. Thanks. Bob is trained as a counseling psychologist, as an environmental scientist, and for 25 years he's also practiced socially engaged Buddhism. As an expert in individual, organizational, and systems dynamics and change, he's authored a number of books, including Leading Change Towards Sustainability, The Power of Sustainable Thinking, and his latest, which is actually the focus of today's call, From Me to We, The 5 Transformational Commitments Required to Rescue the Planet, Your Organization, and Your Life. And with that, I'll turn it over to Bob.
Well, thank you, Meredith, and good afternoon to all of you, or good morning if you're here on the West Coast. Thanks for joining us today. This is the first of a series of free webinars that we decided to offer. Climate Access has always been a program focused on climate communications and behavioral change and organizational change, so we wanted to delve into this in greater depth, and as we'll go through this and talk about the first session here, we, as Meredith said, we do want to hear from you if you'd like more in-depth training sessions beyond these very introductory sessions that on behavioral change, organizational change, and systems change.
Bob, can I interrupt you for just having a hard time hearing you? I don't know if others are as well, but I wanted to let you know that.
Yep, I agree.
Is that better?
Try it again.
Is that better?
A little bit.
Yeah, so I will speak up as much as I can, and we'll go from there. I want to start by just, first of all, saying that you have a PowerPoint that I sent, but I don't have control over it the way we're doing it today. So I will try to give you an instruction as to when you can hit the next letter. move it along. And if you're working on it, looking at it as a PowerPoint that is a full screen, there is animation in it, and that's what we'll be looking at today. So I want to start by simply asking you to think about a few questions. And obviously, we're not going to have an interactive dialogue right now. We can get to that later. But I want you to think about and see if you can determine how many of you know why you do what you personally do. How many of you understand what drives your own behavior? And just sort of think about that. Do you really know why you do what you do? And how many of you think you know how you can alter your thinking and behavior? That is to say, if you want to lose weight, you can always lose weight. If you want to stop smoking or drinking, you can do that. If you want to get more exercise, you can do that. How many of you really think you know how to change your thinking and behavior? And how many of you think of yourself as a change agent, as a person that can motivate and should motivate others to change their thinking and behavior? And normally when I ask that question in a group that I can see, about a third of the group raises their hand for each of the first two questions, and most of the people raise their hands at the last question, in answer to the last question. But if you don't really know what drives your own behavior and aren't sure how to change your own thinking and behavior, how effective can you be as a change agent trying to motivate others to change their thinking and behavior? And that's really the question that we're going to try to dive into today here. I think that with climate change, climate disruption really threatening many of us now, the economic struggles we're going through, growing economic inequality, our greatest challenge today and our greatest need today is to motivate ourselves first and then our organizations, our communities, and eventually our political institutions to alter their thinking and behavior and adopt truly ecologically and socially sustainable activities and a path towards sustainability. Said differently, we need to create a culture of accountability for sustainable thinking and action, and I want to emphasize accountability. And this requires what I consider a fundamental shift from me to we, and I'm going to talk about that in a moment. And while there are numerous frameworks available to guide the changes in practices and technologies and policies required to achieve sustainability, there's the natural step principles that you could follow. There's forest certification standards for forests. There's LEED green building standards for constructing sustainable buildings. There's no framework that exists until now to guide the changes in assumptions and perceptions and beliefs needed to guide the transition to sustainability. And that's why I wrote From Me to We. It is a simple framework I think people and organizations can use to guide the changes in thinking and behavior needed to make the shift from me to we and achieve true sustainability. Before we go on, I'd like to ask everybody again to mute their phone. I'm hearing somebody talk in the background. So there's no background noise. So I'm going to suggest that I'm going to start by suggesting that the shift from me to we that is embedded in sustainable thinking and acting can be thought about as five interrelated commitments that are needed to address today's complex challenges. None of these commitments are new. Wise people, spiritual leaders, and physical and social scientists have told them about us for eons. But we haven't really framed them in a very simple way and put it into context of sustainability. And I think this is really important today because these five commitments can help us align our thinking and behaviors along the lines of a set of what I call the natural laws of sustainability. And these natural laws are universal truths about how we humans must interact with the earth and with each other today if we are to successfully transition through a couple of decades or so of pretty rocky times that lie ahead and shift directions and come out the other end in a much healthier and sustainable condition. a commitment. I've focused on commitments here, and I want to emphasize that in your work and your organizations, because a commitment is an ongoing reflection of priorities, values, and purpose. If you make an explicit commitment, it becomes important because it turns how you think and act into a cohesive and conscious choice. And the ability to choose what we think about is the most powerful tool we have for altering our lives and for creating a positive future for our organizations and society at large. And we expand our choices by altering our interpretations of the world. In fact, if many of you are in the science field, you now know that in just the last decade or so, science has found that the intentional act of focusing your attention on specific forms of thinking and behavior can actually alter the physical makeup of your brain and alter the way your mind functions. Research on meditators, for example, people who have meditated for many, many years, have found that different parts of their brain are larger than other parts. So really retraining ourselves in this way is essential, because climate disruption and economic breakdown and growing social and economic inequality are not at their core technology, energy, or environmental problems. They are symptoms of erroneous human beliefs and assumptions. The problems we're seeing playing out around us today, the challenges our society faces, the challenges your organization faces, at their core are really about how humans think. We're going to dive into that in a little bit here. But to be exact, climate disruption is the greatest failure of thought and imagination in human history. To imagine that a species, we humans, could foul our nests so badly that we're not sure what the future holds. That's a pretty serious failure of thought and imagination. And only after we rise above our current delusions and clearly see how the planet functions and our place in it are we going to really be able to resolve today's challenges. So I'm going to suggest that the five commitments add up to a second order shift from today's all too common self-centered focus on me, which means we are focused on always trying to get what we want when we want it for ourselves or for our families without considering the impacts, to an expanded focus on meeting our needs by always attending to a bigger and broader we, which means focusing on other people here and abroad and on the ecological systems that support all of them, as well as our organizations, our communities, and each of us, each of you on the phone. So at its core, sustainable thinking and acting really involves a shift from a small me to a big and expansive we. And I'm going to close today's session before we take some phone calls, some questions, by talking about how you can make this shift from me to we and change your own thinking and behavior and also alter how your organization changes its thinking and behavior. So I want to start by asking everyone just to step back for a second and take a deep breath and maybe just relax a bit. You've been rushing to get on the call and had a half day of work already, so maybe take another deep breath. And then I want you to ponder what you just physically did. You inhaled oxygen, and most of us don't realize that it is the oxygen that you inhale that really is the key to giving you life. Oxygen metabolizes the food and water you intake and turns it into energy. Oxygen is what detoxifies your bloodstream. And if you don't think oxygen is the most critical aspect of life, try to hold your breath for 30 seconds. It doesn't work too well. We can live for quite a while without food and water, but we can't live without oxygen. And how many of you know where the oxygen that you're breathing right now that is giving you life, allowing you to live right now, how many of you know where that came from? About 3/4 of the oxygen is produced in photosynthesis and single-cell green algae and bacteria in marine environments. And the other quarter or so comes from the same processes, photosynthesis, in forests and other vegetation. And this means that complex interactions occurring in the oceans and in the landscapes all around you create the oxygen that makes your life possible right now. And how conscious of you are you of those relationships and how interdependent or connected and dependent you are on processes going on in the oceans and in vegetations? Not many of us. Do you get up every morning and every time you take a breath say, thank God for the oceans, for the oxygen it's producing? Most of us don't do this. But here is a fundamental truth. Nothing exists on its own. Everything on Earth, including each of us, is created and sustained by other processes. And this is the first natural law of sustainability. If you want to go to the next slide, or the first slide of the five natural laws, and hit the first one, and it's the law of interdependence. The boundaries we create to distinguish ourselves from other people. Can somebody hit mute? We're hearing a train leave or something.
You can do *6 or just mute your individual phone.
There we go. Okay. So the boundaries we create to distinguish ourselves from other people, our organizations from other organizations, we humans from the so-called natural environment, and the economy from social systems, they're not real. Those are just illusions. We create these fantasies in our head, these divisions, in order to divide the world into smaller pieces under the belief that we can understand and control the world better. But that's just an illusion. Is there somebody who has not muted their phone? Could you please do so? There is an old saying in Buddhism that says, I am because we are. Our planet's climate and ecological systems create and sustain all life. And our lives are defined by the relationships we have with other people. Again, nothing exists on its own. And if you're not constantly aware of the complex web of social and ecological systems that created and sustain you and to support all other life on Earth, that is to say, if you're not constantly aware of the context in which you exist, you and your organizations are likely to do more harm than good. And this leads to the first and most important commitment involved with the shift to me, from me to we, that is at the core of sustainable thinking and action. See the social and ecological systems you're part of. You can go to the next slide there, or next downward stroke. And there are a number, it's very difficult to quantify systems, hard to see all the systems we're part of, but we can map them, and you can go to the first downward stroke under practices, skills, and competencies. Systems mapping, whole systems thinking are ways to see the systems we're part of. And if you don't do this kind of activity, or your organization doesn't really try to understand the ecological and social systems that it is dependent upon, I strongly encourage you to engage in that kind of practice. It's extremely enlightening. That's what I teach freshmen and sophomores at the university to do, is to map the systems they're part of consistently, and it's quite an eye-opener for them. Unfortunately, however, most people growing up in Western society and our society just don't think this way. Starting about 350 years ago with the Enlightenment that led to the philosophies of John Locke and Thomas Hobbes and Adam Smith, that spurred the Industrial Revolution, and constantly reinforced over the past century, a social narrative has evolved that promotes the idea that we are each freestanding, independent entities. And the result is that we now live in a culture of extreme individualism that leaves most people and most organizations unaware and unconcerned about the consequences of our actions on the systems we're part of, on the people and ecological systems that we depend on for life. In fact, we're told here in America, at least, that if everyone is responsible for themselves, which is what we're told, we don't have to be concerned about what we do. In fact, we're told to go out and pursue our own self-interest without regard to the consequences, and everything will magically work out for the best. We have economists at the University of Oregon who just promote that all the time. But I think ample experience and a little self-reflection shows us that this way of thinking is patently wrong and extremely dangerous. From the fact that we in the Western societies, and especially in the United States, have promoted our own economic well-being by burning fossil fuels without thinking about the impact on the climate system that we're part of, and creating, the pushing us right up to the edge of runaway climate disruption, to the financial industry, to Wall Street promoting its own economic well-being and then collapsing the economy, the broader economy that it is part of, back in 2009. We really can see that this idea of pursuing our own self-interest without thinking about the consequences on the systems we're part of is really patently wrong. We have confused self-centeredness with individual freedom and are consequently much less free. And this leads to the second natural law of sustainability. You can go down, hit the next button. The law of cause and effect. Everything that happens emerges what preceded it. And in today's overcrowded, overconsumed, overheating, and superconnected world, everything we do today creates the conditions of what will be possible later. Thus, cause and effect is ubiquitous, and it matters more than ever before. Every action we take has an effect on the planet, on our other people, and or ourselves today in some way, in some time. And this leads to the second commitment, you can hit the next button, required for the shift from me to we that is at the core of sustainable thinking and acting. Take responsibility for all of the consequences of your actions. Again, it's very difficult to quantify all of our actions. It's difficult to think about that. There's sometimes unintended consequences. You can hit the next button. But you can map them. And if you don't use fishbone diagrams, for example, which are cause and effect diagrams to understand the likely consequences of an action, or life cycle assessments to assess the consequences of the development of a product or service throughout its entire life cycle, and full disclosure processes, I encourage you to do those, to use those skills. They're very, very powerful tools to help us understand cause and effect. Now I want you to imagine something a little different. I want you to imagine that a genie has swept you away from your everyday duties, no matter what they might be, your job, your teaching, your education that you're involved with. And this genie sweeps you away from those duties and makes you the most powerful decision maker on earth. Just imagine that. Play along with me for a second. But there's a catch. This genie has also given you a unique form of amnesia. You cannot remember who you are, if you have kids or a family, where you live, what your economic status is, what your religion is, what your nationality is. You can't remember anything about who you are. All you know is that you are now the most powerful decision maker on earth, meaning that at your fingertips, you have information, all the information needed to make any decision, and whatever decision you make will affect people around the world. Now, I'd like you to think about that for a second. Imagine that position, and then ask yourself, how would you or your organization make a decision under those circumstances? How would you make decisions when you're the most powerful decision maker, but you don't know who you are? Would you make decisions primarily on cost effectiveness, as we do now? Would there be other strategies you'd use? My guess is you probably would not use cost effectiveness. I think instead you would choose something similar to the age-old moral principle called the golden rule, which is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because those others might include you. And this is the third natural law of sustainability. You can hit the next button. The law of moral justice. As far-fetched as this scenario seems today, you're not likely to become the most powerful decision maker on Earth. What I just described to you is more or less the reality we now live in. When we generate greenhouse gas emissions driving our vehicles, each one of us individually is sending emissions up into the atmosphere that will and can affect everyone on Earth. And similar practices happening in China or any other country are doing the same thing and affecting us. Any action now, because we've globalized environmental problems and economic problems, every action we have now affects others. And we have to decide how we're going to respond in this very new world we live in. In fact, what I just described was not true 50 years ago, but with ocean acidification, global climate change, the globalization of the world economy, this is really true today. So we really have to decide what our moral principles are going to be to respond. And there's a good deal of confusion about what morality means. But morality addresses questions about what is right and what is wrong, what is fair and unfair in human affairs, and what our duties and obligations are to other people. But our culture of extreme individualism has led us to ignore or deny that we have moral obligations to other people. Society's most universal moral obligation, declared by almost every religion and most laws, in fact, is to do no harm. This means we have a moral obligation to prevent unjustifiable suffering and death to people here and abroad, now and in the future. And if we understand that the climate and natural environment create all of our lives and sustain all of our lives, then we also have a moral obligation to protect the environment. And this leads to the next the third commitment. You can hit the next button. Involved with the shift for me, you have to, and that is to adopt the moral and ethical precept to do no harm. And this is a very, very powerful precept. It really means that even if we can't do good, at least we should strive to do no harm. There are a number of, you can hit the next down stroke, there are a number of practices, skills, and competencies in the sustainability field that have emerged focused on doing no harm, trying to become carbon neutral, phasing out of carbon, landfill free, of eliminating our landfill waste, going to zero waste, going to zero discharge of hazardous chemicals. Those are all skills and competencies aimed at reducing and eventually eliminating the harm we're doing to people and nature. And that's really, 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 really important. So far we want to first understand our context, see the systems we're part of. Then we want to account for all of our consequences on those systems. Once we understand the consequences that we're generating, that we are responsible for, we need to adopt the moral principle to do no harm to those and begin to change our practices policies to achieve that goal. And now I want to shift gears yet again and have you imagine the picture of the Earth taken by the Apollo 17 astronauts in 1972 called the Blue Marble. It's the first picture humanity ever had of our planet as a whole, of our home. And the astronauts said the Earth looked like a glass marble, which is how it got its name. Can you see that picture in your mind's eye? The Earth sort of standing out there all alone, floating in space. It's disconnected from everything else, and there are no intake pipes allowing us to bring in more resources if we use up all of our natural resources or contaminate resources and can't use them anymore. And by keeping that picture in your mind, you can also see there's no discharge pipes allowing us to dispense of our toxic material and waste. Everything we do or make stays right here on our planet or in our immediate atmosphere. And there's a great deal of discussion today going on within the scientific community of the fact that we have now entered a brand new geological era called the Anthropocene. This is the name for the geological era, which is defined by man's massive impact on the planet, where human activities, rather than natural processes, will now determine the future of all life on Earth. That is to say, from climate change to ocean acidification, what happens with future life on Earth will be determined by what we do now and in the immediate future. And it's a universal moral axiom that the more power you have over another, the greater your responsibility is for that life. And if our activities will now determine the fate of all other life on Earth, we have a responsibility to understand that we are now the trustees, and we must manage the assets, we must manage life on Earth now to ensure that it continues on into the future. And this is the fourth natural law of sustainability, the law of trusteeship. You can hit the next downward stroke. And it leads to the fourth commitment involved with the shift from me to we, that is at the core of sustainable thinking. Accept your trustee responsibilities and take responsibility for all life on Earth. And you can hit the next downward stroke, and you can see that we have practices and skills and competencies that are emerging here also. Biomimicry, trying to create goods and services by mimicking the way nature works. Going to green chemistry, which are natural processes, not synthetic chemicals, using 100% renewables. While the law of moral justice talks about doing no harm, the law of trusteeship focuses in on doing good and trying to restore systems that are deeply degraded. Now, the final natural law is really, really important. It's important to remember that our culture of extreme individualism is really rather new by historical standards. It only is about 350 years old, and it came about as a result of very specific choices made by our predecessors in response to the conditions of their day. That is to say, it came out of the era of feudalism, where feudal lords and kings and the church controlled the body and the mind and the economy and travel of everyone, especially in Europe. The people who developed this new thinking responded to that by saying, no, we're free individuals. We can think on our own, act on our own, et cetera. And that way of thinking has been embellished many times over, and we have what we have today. But those conditions have long since passed, thankfully, and we now face a whole set of different kinds of complex challenges. And just as they changed their thinking 350 years ago, we must change our thinking and make different choices today. And what's really important to remember is that societies have changed their thinking many times in the past. They've changed their core beliefs many times. We once believed that the sun revolved around the earth, that burning people at the stake kept the evil spirits away, et cetera, et cetera. And every time we rose above those illusions, everyone ended up better off. And this leads to the fifth and final law, natural law of sustainability. You can go down again. The law of free will. We humans are always free to choose how we perceive the world. We have many times in the past, and we are free again now to change our thinking and beliefs at any time. If we change our beliefs, we will change our actions. If we change our actions, we will produce different results. And that means that we are our own jailers today, and we can get out of our own self-imposed perceptual jail and change the results we're producing. And this leads to the fifth and final commitment involved with the shift from me to we, that is at the core of sustainable thinking and acting. Choose your own destiny by committing to be completely sustainable. And then you can go down again. One more. There are a number of tools that are emerging to make this shift. These are change management tools, the pyramid of change, which I'm going to talk about in a second. Just like to have you spend a brief moment pondering to yourself, how often do you try to abide by those natural laws? How often are you aware of those natural laws? And how often do you try to abide by those five commitments? You might want to, after we're done here, evaluate yourself, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, for example, 1 being, no, I really don't really spend time thinking about the systems I'm part of and how I affect them, or 5 being, I do it all the time. My guess is most of you will end up somewhere in the middle. That's okay. Do the same thing for your organizations. How often does your organization focus in on those issues? How often does it try to account for the effects of its activities? To what extent that it has a clear moral principle to do no harm? To what extent does your organization take responsibility for protecting and restoring all life, et cetera? Just think about that. Now, I want to shift gears for 10 minutes and talk about how you can embed this kind of thinking, these 5 commitments, in your organization and how you can motivate yourself, in fact, to make the change. Go to the next slide. And you can think about change as a pyramid. I'm just going to go down the pyramid of change here. At the top of the pyramid are the results we're achieving or want to achieve, the financial results, the social, the ecological, the psychological results. And below the results are a set of actions we're taking to produce those results, the policies we've adopted, technologies, practices, behaviors, et cetera. And the top of the pyramid is typically where we spend most of our time. We focus on results and on the actions. And think about what you do at work. Most of the time, you're focusing in on those two elements. And what we forget is that below the actions are a set of beliefs, assumptions and values and just worldviews we hold that lead us to act in certain ways that produce certain kind of results. So our beliefs lead us to adopt certain kind of policies and not others. Our beliefs lead us to adopt certain kinds of technologies and not others, or to act in certain ways and not act in other ways. And below those beliefs are a set of experiences we've had, sometimes as young as 6 months old or even in the womb. Many of your core experiences have shaped your beliefs, and certainly the beliefs, the experiences you're having now in your organization or in society are shaping your beliefs, your assumptions and values, your worldviews about people or your role in the world. And those beliefs, again, affect our actions, and those actions produce certain results. Go down again, and you'll to the right side. You'll see that if we really want to make the shift from me to we, you have to focus on all 4 aspects of the pyramid of change, but you especially have to focus on the lower aspect, the lower tiers of the pyramid. You have to help people change their thinking, and to do that, you have to help create different kinds of experiences. So go to the next slide. One of the ways that's a very powerful way to do that, that make that shift, is to start off by just going through the pyramid and detailing out the current results and status that you're producing. So start with the current results. What is your organization currently producing, not just environmentally, but economically, socially, and otherwise? Are people really happy to work there? Do they feel committed? What are the true, complete range of environmental consequences that are being produced, pro and con, beneficial and not beneficial? What actions are you taking that are producing those results, and really spend some time teasing those out? What beliefs are leading people to act in that way, to adopt certain policies, certain technologies? And what experiences have people had or are they currently having that lead them to believe in that way? Take some time to flesh that out. Then move and talk about second order change. What would the results be in our organization or in your family or in your personal life if you were truly acting sustainably and thinking sustainably? What actions would we need to focus on and achieve to produce those results? What beliefs do we need to hold to produce those actions? And what kind of experiences do we need to have to create and support those new sets of beliefs? And you can then put those 2 lists side by side and have a discussion about where are we and where do we want to be, and focus in on what needs to stop, what needs to start, and what should continue. And that's a very powerful process. I just did this last 2 weeks ago in Phoenix with two different organizations, and it really helps enlighten everyone, first of all, that the results you're achieving are purely the result of our own thinking and behavior, meaning, and the experiences that we've created in our organizations, meaning that if we're producing the results because of us, we can also change. It's a very empowering process to understand that. And so I would really encourage everyone to dive into that and think about the pyramid of change all the time in all the work you're trying to do. Now, I want to close with a few brief points, and then we'll take questions. First, all of us, each of us, has the capacity to make the shift from me to we. It's not going to be easy, but what important change ever is, but it is definitely doable. And in doing so, we're all going to end up, I think, much better off, but it will require a clear and firm commitment. And I find it sort of ironic that after fighting so many wars to protect our way of life, so to speak, here in the U.S., we've given up our most important freedom almost without a fight, and that is our freedom of thought. We think that the way things are now is the only way it can be. But true freedom is really the freedom from the constraints of outdated, erroneous beliefs and ideas. And today's dominant cultural narrative, which we seem to be clinging to with everything we've got, is that we each exist independently of the Earth's conditions and processes, and that extreme self-centeredness is synonymous with freedom. And this belief in freedom in the service of self-centered greed and aggression is really eroding the ecological basis of life and increasing fear and suffering worldwide, leaving all of us and all of our children and future generations much less free. But if we can realize the errors of our thinking and make the shift to focus on the larger we that makes all life possible and worthwhile, I think we will all be set free. All mass action is the result of individual actions, of people making a pledge between themselves and their makers to do the right thing, no matter what. And I think if you say, I will do this, I will focus on these commitments, you will continually improve and get better and expand your awareness, and others will then do so as well. If we make a commitment to sustainable thinking and action, to the shift from me to we will all become free to innovate and create a new like never before. And as the next slide shows, I think we'll create a much better world, even if we find out that some of the things we're nervous about today don't turn out to be as bad as we think, although I think the trends are worse than we think. We could create a better world by focusing on the shift from me to we. But every action that we take now creates the future for yourself, your children, and all future generations, and all of our actions will add up to create that result. And sometimes it will take a focus, a specific kind of focus in our minds to keep ourselves oriented toward the shift to me to we. So you can go to the next slide. And if you want to, I invite you all to make your own me to we pledge. If you can think of a few words or a phrase that helps you think about committing to the shift to me from me to we, to the five commitments, or to paying attention to those five natural laws, I invite you to write down a word or a phrase, repeat it to yourself, and then put it on your mirror at home in your bathroom or your refrigerator or in front of you at the office, and help your organization do something similar. A pledge is a very powerful process. And finally, I want to close by saying a little bit about leadership. Leadership and management are both important, but they're really very different, and I think it's important to keep that in mind. Management is about keeping complex systems of people and technologies working effectively and efficiently to achieve an outcome, a very important process. But leadership is about something fundamentally different. It's about creating a vision of the future that everyone will benefit from and aspire to, and encouraging and motivating people to achieve that vision because they feel good about it themselves despite all sorts of obstacles that they're going to run into. And my experience is that most sustainability programs are vastly overmanaged and underled. So the most important task we have before us is to lead change to sustainability. And this begins with you and your families and then your organizations, and eventually social contagion occurs and it moves up to our political institutions and our society at large. So I just want to close by the last PowerPoint you see. It's a poem by Mary Lou Anderson called Leaders, and I always like to close my presentations by talking about it. Leaders are called to stand in that lonely place between the no longer and the not yet, and intentionally make decisions that will bind, forge, move, and create history. We are not called to be popular. We are not called to be safe. We are not called to follow. We are the ones called to change attitudes, to risk displeasures. We are the ones called to gamble our lives for a better future. And that's what all of us and all of you on the phone really need to commit to and have committed to, even by showing up for this call. You're the leaders, and I wish you the best on your journey to sustainability. So we now have about a little less than 15 minutes to answer questions, and I'll turn it back over to Meredith, and she can respond to those.
Thanks. Yeah, if you've muted yourself with *6, you can just press *6 again to unmute yourself. And if you have a question for Bob, you can ask away.
Hi, Bob. This is Amy Bennett. Can you hear me?
Yeah, barely, but go ahead.
Okay, I'll try talking a little louder. I was really interested in the pyramid with the experiences past and present and how that leads up to beliefs and then further to actions and results. And can you give me some examples of how we might try to change those experiences or create new experiences?
Yeah, well, first of all, very good question. Thank you. Everything that happens in an organization and certainly in society, but certainly in an organization, is an experience. That is to say, people are paying attention to everything, and it shapes their thinking and beliefs. So I was just down in Phoenix, as I said, and working with a public organization, and they're having a hard time getting traction internally for the goals that they've set from a sustainability perspective, let alone traction in the community. So I started to ask them to sort of write down the experiences they have. Well, the city, the organization has adopted a set of sustainability policies, but the senior executives drive around in SUVs that spew lots of greenhouse gases, low mileage, et cetera. And people said, you know, that's an experience that makes us believe that nobody's really serious about this issue. That's one example that just because of the actions of certain leaders, everybody looked at that and said, well, this can't be serious. And I shouldn't give my all here because I'm not going to get promoted for doing this kind of work, et cetera. This isn't the priority for the organization. So you have to think about all of the different ways in which people learn and who they're learning from to think about the experiences. And then you have to create different kinds of experiences. And so one of the strategies that came out of this was that there was going to be discussions about how to get senior executives to use, you know, smaller vehicles, public transportation, Priuses, hybrids, whatever, to symbolize the change that they wanted everybody to engage in.
Just walk the walk kind of thing.
Walk the walk, absolutely, but and do it in a practical way that everyone else realizes they can do also. And that's just one example of an experience. Everything that happens, your purchasing policies, if it's lowest cost supplier, that's an experience that people say, well, we're not really worried about the consequences of our actions, et cetera. So think about all of the different ways, all of the messages that things going on in your organization are giving away.
Excuse me, Bob?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm a student in college at the Rochester Institute of Technology in New York. I'm a member of an environmental organization on campus, and recently we were at one of our meetings, we were having a discussion about ideas for what kinds of things we'd like to see happen on campus to hopefully get our student body and not just our administration, because one of the things I'm proud of going to this college is that our president, our university president, and our well, basically the entire administration has had a big focus about wanting to promote sustainable technologies and, you know, basically going green in general. But what, and I'm sure like this there's nothing special about my college in this respect. But as far as the student body is concerned, you know, being in our demographic, largely apathetic, you can imagine the kind of attitudes that about this entire focus. How might we, this environmental club I'm a part of, try and, you know, change that, you know, student population-wide attitude that's more apathetic toward one that, you know, obviously cares more about this, and possibly taking a more significant, serious, bold leader step as a college to hopefully inspire other colleges to do the same. And while having this meeting, I brought up some ideas that I guess you could say on the whole they reflect a more guilt and I guess you could even say shame-oriented attitude to try and promote this change. But also as a psychology student myself, I'm taking a class in positive psychology, and I definitely see the value in being positive about it. But given the scope and the issue and everything, I wonder how could you possibly, in your experience, I guess this is my question. Sorry for taking so long to get to this. How, in your experience, what have you found most effective to inspire the people in small meetings, like in a room like that yourself,
to make the change,
be more bold? Yeah.
Right. Let me jump in here. So, well, there's a couple of things. One, you could remember that the first step is with yourselves and with your campus group. And it's best, rather than trying to go out and tell other people that they need to change, it's really to make sure that you are all clear about the changes you want to make and begin to model it in all the different places that the students that you're involved with participate. So modeling is critical. People will begin to see it, and others will ask to join. Others will ask, well, what is this about? And just sort of share it that way without trying to pushing it on other people. You could also go to your university president and ask them to sign the university president's climate challenge. Many, many college presidents around the U.S. have done that. That sets the – if he does sign that, the university will then do its own greenhouse gas inventory and create its own action plan. And it trickles down and it begins to affect every aspect of campus.
Yeah.
And there's
so
an opportunity.
Sorry to interrupt, but he actually already has. I'm pretty sure I have in mind the climate commitment you're talking about. And I know he already has. I guess my question is really targeted more just for the student population,
right,
you know, at the lower level instead of from the top down. How might the bottom up, you know?
Let's do this. Let's take another question, and can we talk more about this offline, maybe by email? Because
absolutely,
there are some suggestions, there, and I think, again, it does start with your group doing projects on your own and inviting others into it rather than just people are unmotivated for reasons, and actually we're going to talk about that during the next free webinar, how you motivate people to change. But just to think that they're not motivated is often an erroneous perception. But let's talk more about that online and see if there's any other questions that people have before we go on.
Okay.
Anyone else have a question for Bob?
Okay.
No? All right. Well, Bob, do you have any closing words or before I thank everyone and say goodbye?
Well, again, this was a very introductory, from me to we 101 session to give you a sense of the framework. I really encourage everyone to think about those five commitments and how they can apply them in their lives, how they can then help others apply them. Again, we're going to talk more about the process of change during the next free webinar in a month or so, which really means that people go through a series of stages when they make a change, and that's what we'll talk about then. So we encourage you all to participate in that, and hope you found this today helpful. Thank you.
Great, and thanks so much for joining. Also, just a reminder, if you're not already a member of Climate Access, you can visit climateaccess.org and sign up to become a member. We'd love to have you in the network. And our next Climate Access Roundtable, which you'll have access to as a member, is a discussion about the presidential election, which will be on October 16th, is that webinar. We'll be talking with a panel of experts about building a sense of efficacy before and after the election. Also, keep an eye out for a follow-up survey that we'll be sending out tomorrow so we can get your feedback on today's talk and also to kind of gauge your interest in future topics.